Robin Hood Radio and the Robin Hood Radio Network is proud to present Leonard Lopate at Large, lively hour-long in-depth discussions providing overviews and context to topics usually covered in partial measures. His guests include leading thinkers, scientists, artists, economists, farmers, historians, authors, and politicians. Mr. Lopate is a Peabody Award winner whose numerous honors include 3 Associated Press Awards and 3 James Beard Awards.
Welcome to Leonard Lopate at Large. I'm Leonard Lopate. As a radio host, I can tell you that even the most educated people sometimes come across a word that they don't know how to pronounce correctly. A few months ago, the brother and sister team of Catherine Petrus and Ross Petrus were on our show to talk about their book, That Doesn't Mean What You Think It Means, the 150 Most Commonly Misused Words and Their Tangled Histories. They have followed that with another book from 10 Speed Press, this one called You're Saying It Wrong, a pronunciation guide to the 150 most commonly mispronounced words and their tangled histories of misuse. And we thought it would be fun to open the phones and let you, our listeners, call in with your pronunciation questions. Our number here is 212-209-2877. I'm pleased to welcome Catherine and Ross Petrus back to our show. Hello.
Hi, how you doing, Leonard?
Okay.
Hi there.
Are any of the most commonly mispronounced words also among the most commonly misused words?
Oh, certainly. There's one of my favorites, and I now mispronounce it because I used to hear it so much, is plethora. It's mispronounced plethora very frequently, and it's used nowadays many times incorrectly to mean something. There are a lot of, I have a plethora of great things happening. And actually it means too many things happening, so you would never use it for the great things part.
You call these commonly mispronounced words shibboleth words. Why shibboleth? Isn't that a Hebrew word?
It is, but actually it applies here. A shibboleth is technically a customer mode of speaking, behaving, or believing that you can distinguish then one group or one individual from another group. And the word actually means grain stalks, which you wouldn't think has anything to do with pronunciation. But in biblical times, there was a war with the, Ross, you're going to have to pronounce it.
Gileadites.
I'm not going to mispronounce while talking about mispronunciation.
Yes.
Well, I'm deathly afraid
the
that...
Ephraimites, and the Ephraimites lost the battle, and they were trying to flee across the River Jordan. And the Gileadites were not the nicest of people, wanted to kill all the fleeing Ephraimites. But as is typical in most wars, they looked pretty much alike, and they talked pretty much alike, and they acted pretty much alike. But they did have one interesting difference. One group could pronounce an SH in the word shibboleth, and one group could not. And it turns out that the Ephraimites could not pronounce shibboleth correctly, or in the view of the Gileadites correctly. They would say sibboleth. So the Gileadites would stop people and ask them to say stalk of grain in Hebrew, and those who could, they let live, and those who said sibboleth, they killed.
Well,
and from there we got the idea of the word of being in the in crowd or the out crowd. In this case, the out crowd meant you could die, but...
Yeah, we don't do that anymore. But you can also tell whether somebody is from a certain part of the country by how they pronounce words, and of course, certain parts of the world. Americans pronounce certain words differently than the Brits do, and then we all pronounce words differently than people from other parts of the world do, and we'll talk about some of those. But writing about pronunciation can be tricky. Dictionaries use certain symbols to designate sounds, but many people don't know how to interpret those symbols. Have you developed your own form of pronunciation guidelines?
Well, this is something actually that we found kind of problematic. We tried to make it like the spelling phonetic. We capitalized things when it was a stressed syllable and so on. That said, I must admit, when we go through it, a few times we've looked at things and said, that's not as clear as we would have liked it to have been. But at least it's a little clearer, like you see a schwa, you see an upside-down E, and I think a lot of people are hard-pressed to know, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
What do you say? How do you say it? So we tried. Let's put it through. We tried hard to make it a little easier.
Don't some words have more than one acceptable pronunciation? For example,
the
book you
mentioned,
Aegis and Aerie,
which is the whole point of that. A lot of words have several different pronunciations.
Well, you mentioned,
for example,
Aegis and Airy.
A friend of mine is a Brit. He says garage. Mm-hmm. I say garage. I don't know what you say, but
I think most Americans say garage, and the Brits say garage. I think they're picking it up to some degree from the French. No, although the French would say, would they say garage?
I would think, yeah.
It's
tough, though, because also now, because of both the internet and television, you're seeing more of a blur in pronunciation. Americans have picked up a lot of Britishisms and British pronunciation and vice versa. So you start, it's not quite as clear-cut as it used to be, say, in the past when we were more isolated, I would argue.
I tried a number of times to ask you about Aegis and Airy, two words that start with A-E's, automatically causing confusion just simply through their spelling. So should they be pronounced with the long A or the long E?
Either way, that's there we go with one of the ones you were talking about, when a word can be pronounced both ways. I say Aegis. Actually, as we said in the book, you say Aegis, I say Aegis. I say Aegis. But Aegis tends to be the first pronunciation usually listed in dictionaries. But you're certainly fine saying Aegis.
And then there's a word, the word about showing public respect, that can be pronounced all sorts of different ways. Homage, homage, and homage. Are they equally correct?
They are. That's an interesting word because it came from the Norman French, when the Normans took over England. And, of course, they pronounced it in the French manner, homage. But then it was called a spelling error in terms of pronunciation, took over. The French would pronounce it homage, but they spelled it with an H, and they just didn't pronounce the H. And from there, the English took it and pronounced it homage. Then what happened later, which is particularly around now, is that the French sounds much more classy. So now it tends to be pronounced homage in places like New York City.
So to some degree, aren't the more difficult words the words that people use to try to sound classy?
Exactly. That we found with both of the books, both misused words and mispronounced words, more often than not, the more you try to sound like upper crusty and erudite or whatever, the more you blow it, to be blunt. So it's a problem.
Well, I hope that I don't embarrass myself too much through this conversation. But let's let the audience also join in and see how embarrassed they can be. Our number here is...
I got to state here and now, though, both Ross and I have been embarrassed ourselves many, many times. So the one thing we found in doing this was how many words we either misused or mispronounced ourselves, which is kind of jaw-dropping when you're writing on the topic. You go, oh, my God, all along I've been doing this. Mm-hmm. So it's been a learning experience for us as well.
Our number here is 212-209-2877. Let's take a call. Hi, BAI, you're on the air.
Hello, Leonard. It's Peter Seymour from, well, olden days, but I love your show. Hey, here's what I was about to say, that Lollapalooza is a modern-day shibboleth. Did I get that right?
You did, and it was actually used, it was in a comic during World War II, and it was used to distinguish Japanese from Chinese. It was used for soldiers to distinguish Japanese from Chinese.
Right.
So it's an interesting shibboleth, and in that case, the wrong pronunciation could have resulted in death. The problem I have with that one is my son has a tendency to mispronounce L's, so I think he may have been in trouble as well.
Hmm. Right. I was thinking the same thing, that it was to separate, distinguish the Japanese from the Philippines, who could say Lollapalooza, except if you were a Filipino with a speech defect, it could cost your life.
You bet. That's not a good thing.
That's really tough, actually.
That's because in Japanese, the L sound, there's no real L sound. It's more like a R sound.
It's a R sound,
so
exactly.
Sometimes when those words are put into English, they are spelled either with an R or an L.
Mm-hmm.
But they're neither. You don't say lenge, you say renge.
Well, you've heard of that famous, after World War II, I'm not even sure it's apocryphal, but the Japanese put up a sign, we pray for MacArthur's erection to the presidency.
Uh-huh. Oh, boy.
I know.
It conjures up images. What can I say?
Peter, thank you for calling.
Okay.
When we were talking about the misuse of words, we wondered if the majority of people use them wrong, shouldn't that come to be the accepted version? Is the same thing applied to pronunciations?
That's interesting. In honesty, I think that more often you see the evolution of a meaning of a word or use of a word more than the pronunciation of a word. Pronunciations tend to be, I think, a little more static. I'm not sure why, actually. Russ, do you know? I'm actually asking.
Well, actually, I would tend to disagree with you. I think pronunciations change fairly frequently. We just don't notice it because we hear it. Try listening to a 1940s movie, Katharine Hepburn, with that sort of pseudo-British accent, and then listen to a modern movie, and the accents are quite different. There is
that's
a shift, and for example,
that's
right
not,
now in upstate New York, apparently, there's a vowel shift with, let me try to think, it has like this, C-U would cup would be more like cup or something like that. So it does change fairly frequently.
Let's take another call. Our number, as I have been announcing, is 212-209-2877, and WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for an interesting program. I had two questions, one comment and one question. One is, have you guys looked into the history of like biblical words? That's like a part-time interest of mine, because from what I have been learning is that some of the words originally started differently and they turned out to mean something else. The other thing that
can you give me an example?
Well, you know, I don't want to, like, you know, like the word Lord, it could mean to, from a religious point, Lord means something different, but we interpret it as something else, if you go back to the historical meaning of the word. And then there's other things, too, just like Christ means Christo, comes from Christo, which means anointed, etc. I mean, that's a topic that is kind of a little bit, kind of it will take some time. But my one question that I had, so it's kind of funny because, you know, Christmas season, we buy Christmas trees and wreaths. I always call it wreath.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I say wreath because to me, when I see the way it's written, to me it's pronounced wreath. What
that
is correct? Is it wreath?
That is how a lot of people mispronounce. You've seen a word, so you just automatically pronounce it in your head that way, and then when you say it out loud, you're saying it how you've read it, which is sometimes a very different thing than how it should be pronounced. And that's, I think, one of the most common reasons people mispronounce words. They've read them first and have not heard them. And then sometimes you have the weird dichotomy, like a word like segue, S-E-G-U-E. I mean, you've seen the word, and you know what it means, but you don't associate segue, the word segue, how it's pronounced, with that thing that you've seen spelled.
And then
it's a weird thing, actually.
And then we have words like slew or slough, or even slow, S-L-O-U-G-H. Some people say slough. They end with O-U-G-H, so we have through, though, thought, cough, all ending with O-U-G-H. I would think that somebody who's coming to English for the first time would really be confused.
A lot of native English speakers are confused, I think.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for calling. You were saying, Catherine?
Well, it actually comes from a problem in English because we don't really have the G-H word in many cases was originally a sound like huh in loch. And when printing first began, they didn't really know what to do. So they ended up putting, the printer Caxton was probably the first who did it, would put G-H in place of that huh sound, not knowing what else to write. And then there used to be an Old English letter, yoh, written sort of like a three, and that would sort of show that sound, but we don't have it anymore. So then once that G-H came into being, that spelling error that we were talking about comes into play, and then people pronounce things as they see them or as they don't see them. For example, willow in Shakespearean texts is spelled W-I-L-L-O-U-G-H. Hmm. And a lot of times people think it may have been pronounced will off. We don't know.
What about the A-U-G-H-T words like D D-R-A-U-G-H, which is pronounced draft, but doesn't rhyme with taught or caught.
No, it doesn't. But, and it, that's another case where that h sound was originally there, the look sound, and then it changed. And for some reason, that switched over into F. We don't quite know why. Consonants drift, and people pronounce things differently. But daughter, for example, used to be pronounced dafter, D-A-F-T-E-R. And I think Shakespeare has a rhyme with daughter and after and slaughter, which would have been slafter. So.
I'm speaking with the two authors of You're Saying It Wrong, a pronunciation guide to the 150 most commonly mispronounced words and their tangled histories of misuse, which is published by 10 Speed Press. This is Leonard Lopate at Large on WBAI, New York 99.5 FM. Well, in some cases, it's when you hear the real name, the real pronunciation, you know you're never going to do it. For example, the Dutch painter, Van Gogh. Nobody says that. In England, they say Van Gogh, and we say Van Gogh.
That's the problem. A lot of times, the correct pronunciation, you sound like an idiot if you actually use it. I mean, then you've got cases like we have an example here which fascinated both of us. It's Dr. Seuss, you know, as in, you know, Cat in the Hat, et cetera. He actually, it was supposed to be pronounced Dr. Seuss because it was his mother's maiden name, and that's how you would pronounce it in German. But everyone called it Seuss, so he just gave up and said, okay, Seuss, and the rest is history.
And that's the way it's pronounced probably all over the world now.
Exactly. I wonder now if you have that last name, if people automatically call you Seuss, even if you're not the good doctor.
Some of the words we mentioned earlier are used when people want to impress others, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing them correctly. Hegemony, synecdoche, erv. It becomes kind of embarrassing if you're trying to show off and you pronounce them incorrectly.
Sometimes there's a debate about that, too. With hegemony, for example, many people, the correct pronunciation is technically hegemony, or the most used pronunciation. But many people learn it as hegemony, including, I think my son was taking a course in international relations, and his professor said hegemony, and he'd learned hegemony, and they had a big little argument about it. That's one thing I want to say about words, though. In many cases, and that's what we said, shibboleth, the original title of the book was shibboleth, rather than you're saying it wrong, because in many cases, the pronunciation varies according to who's saying it and why. I would think in certain cases, like hegemony and hyperbole, for example, those are the correct, acceptable pronunciations. I would not tell anyone to say hegemony or hyperbole.
On the other hand,
although the Prime Minister of, I believe it was New Zealand, did.
He pronounced it hyperbole? That sounds like the networks promoting football game.
Actually, now it's also spawned a sort of extreme bowling game is called Hyper Bowl now too. So
there are certain words like the planet named after a Greek god, where you might be uncomfortable not pronouncing it Uranus because the other one sounds like an off-color pun.
And of which there are many, as you well know. How many headlines have I seen with a play on that particular planet?
It's funny. I just saw one today, oddly enough, in the astronomy magazine. Scientists plan to probe deeper into Uranus or Uranus. So
now, what is the correct pronunciation? Is there a correct one? Obviously, it comes out of the Greek. Do you know? I guess not.
Oh, I have no idea.
I'm sorry. Your voice kind of, I keep losing the sound on my end, so sometimes I don't hear you. You said it comes from the Greek?
Well, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, it does. It comes from Uranus.
Uranus.
Yes,
so we should be saying Uranus.
Technically, the preferred pronunciation would be Uranus, but Uranus, for whatever reason, which is hard to say with a straight face, I'm very sorry, I feel sophomoric, but it's true, is what a lot of us had first learned it as. And this is another case, I think, because of the woeful puns that can be in there. I think more and more people are trying desperately to say Uranus.
Now,
but is it going to last? I don't know.
I'm glad you used
it. You are correct. It does come originally from the Greek Uranus, but it didn't come to English via the Greek. It came via the mediation of the of Latin. And the Latin Latin Roman, it was Uranus. So from there it came to English.
Yeah, well, that's what astronomers prefer, stressing the first syllable, Uranus. The problem is that I think, like we said, so many people knew it as Uranus, which makes me, I feel like I'm getting very familiar with body parts here.
Now, Catherine, you said that you didn't want to sound sophomoric. Some people say sophomoric.
That's true. That's very good. A lot of people, that's one thing we found, there are different types of mispronunciation. A lot of people throw in extra syllables. Mischievous comes to mind. Mm-hmm. It's mischievous. It's not mischievous, but that's a very common mispronunciation. Interesting, adding, you know, you're just adding an extra syllable in there when it's not needed.
And why do you think we do that? Does it, because it's easier to pronounce, or is that a regional thing?
Well, two reasons, actually. One, a lot of times it is easier to pronounce. Other times it comes from because we actually identify another word with it. For example, one that gets me, actually, and I made the mistake, I didn't notice I was, but the Olympic events, triathlon or biathlon or decathlon, I say decathlon. It's easier to say decathlon than decathlon. But that comes from the Greek, and it's athlon is a contest, and then deca is 10. But try to say decathlon or decathlon. Decathlon sounds easier. That's the principal reason. We throw in vowels usually to make them sound more mellifluous.
Well, yeah, like it's just Christmas where everybody had poinsettias. And, I mean, I always said, now this is a case where I took out the vowel, and I know other people do too. They say poinsettia instead of poinsettia. So that's a case where instead of, for ease of pronunciation, instead of adding a vowel, they're taking it out. They're sliding over that.
Well, even either of those pronunciations, in a way, are distortions because it was a plant that was found by a French diplomat in Mexico, Poinsett. And so when he brought the plants out of Mexico, they were originally pronounced poinsettia.
Right.
We have some more calls
but
coming.
Going back to the other word that you were saying this before, though, a lot of times there is a reason because it sounds like something else. Like Kathy said, mischievous. Mm-hmm. That sounds a lot like devious. We know the I-O-U-S ending, devious, et cetera. We don't have as many without the I, so we then pronounce mischievous, mischievous.
Should we take another call?
Fun.
Okay.
Yes.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hi. How you doing? Yes. Interesting show. I really like it. It reminded me of a text that I texted a person about, and in the text it said, that you have to exercise your creativity, and the spell check made it like exorcist exercise. So they were laughing at me. I'm like, well, then I retorted, well, you really would want spiritually clean creativity, wouldn't you? Very good job. I just remember that. I'm sorry. You know, I wanted to get back to slow. You mentioned that before. It's S-L-O-U-G-H.
Yeah.
And that's like a low-lying land, a wetland, right? Is that the slough you're talking about? That, or is that
yes, that is what we're talking about. Because if it's shedding skin, you say slough, even though it's spelled the same way.
Oh, so it's spelled the same way, but you say it two different ways. Okay, I wanted to clear that up. Slough.
Yes, you got it. Very good.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much. Good, great show. Thank you.
Thanks you for your call. And we're going to take another call now. BAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, welcome back, Lionel. It's great to hear you're back.
Thanks.
The word that I always get hung up with is schedule. How do you say that, schedule? Is it scheduled or schedule?
Well, the Brits say schedule, but they also say laboratory.
And aluminium.
They talk funny. Yes. It's because they talk funny.
So if you're having dialogue, if you're at school and you want to say, I want to be scheduled for the semester, what should I say? How should I introduce that word to the lexicon?
I think when in Rome, do as the Romans do, and when in America, do as the Americans do. I would say schedule in England, and I would say schedule in the States. And if you're in Canada...
Would you? I think I would still say schedule in England because I'm American.
Yes. Might seem pretentious.
That's actually true, too.
So when was the first time you heard the translation different? The first time you heard them say they have to drag it out, Cedric. Does that distinguish between which who's better and who's not?
Well, you were mentioning that in Canada, sometimes people say schedule.
Well, it was interesting because Canada has a lot of later British immigrants. In the States, pretty much the British immigrants came in the 1700s, and then various other huge numbers of immigrants came. Canada tends to have a lot of Brits, at least in Toronto, and I hear schedule frequently. I hear schedule more frequently, but I do hear schedule.
We were talking about how we try to pronounce certain words the way they're pronounced in the original language, like Schadenfreude or Vichyssoise, but some of them are a little hard for us, aren't they? For example, names. The Vietnamese name Nguyen.
That one fascinates me because it's so counterintuitive to our spelling and pronunciation. It's pronounced win, but I think most people, when they first see that word, if they're not, you know, knowing the Vietnamese, say Nguyen or Nguyen. You know, it's the NG, it throws, I think, the majority of people. But it's win. In fact, I remember Ross, the first time when we did this book, Ross happened to write that particular section. He was working at the library at the University of Toronto. Ross, you finish that, because I love that.
It's just wonderful. This young woman said she wanted to work for us, and we took her application, and she wrote down her name, and she wrote down Nguyen. So I said, oh, thank you, Miss Wen. And she went, you pronounced my name correctly. And it was really a thrill. The book came in useful for me at that point, because I would have said Nguyen, actually.
Well, Vietnamese words get confusing anyway, because obviously they weren't written in Vietnam with Roman letters. But another one is P-H-O, of the food word, P-H-O.
That's one that also spawns, mispronounced, I should add, spawns many terrible puns, but I won't go into any of them. But that's pho, and everybody thinks it's pho, which is why you see, like, restaurants called faux shore or something like that, which is incorrect because you're saying faux shore, which is not quite the same. And then the other one that gets me in terms of, this obviously it's spelled in regular, regular alphabet, but Irish words are really problematic in terms of pronunciation. We put as an example Siobhan, which is spelled S-I-O-B-H-A-N. And I know as a kid, I had a friend named Siobhan, and I thought it was spelled C-H-E-V-A-W-N. And I'd see the name Sihabon and think that was a completely different name. But that's another area of the world where we find it difficult to do the spelling pronunciation.
A whole bunch of Irish names. N-I-A-M-H is Neve.
Neve.
Yeah,
that one really gets me. A woman I know at the University of Toronto has her name, and then underneath it in parentheses, she has the pronunciation for her name on her business cards for good reason, because I would have said Niama or something.
And another one, really difficult, A-O-I-F-E, which is Ifa.
Ifa.
Now,
that is tough.
Now, that's because they're from the Celtic, or should we say Celtic, which is the name of the basketball team.
See, that's the problem with pronunciation. You start panicking whenever you open your mouth, you know?
So if you're talking about the basketball team, it's the Boston Celtics.
Yes.
So, I mean, there you go with pronunciation again.
But the language is Celtic.
Yes. It comes from the ancient Greek, tribal group of people who were moving across Europe, and the Greeks called them the Celtoi, with a K. The Romans took it. The Romans didn't have a K. They put a C, and then we have spelling error again coming in. People see the C, and they'd make it a soft C. But it technically should be Celtic.
Let's take another call. Our number here is 212-209-2877. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi. There are two words that are mispronounced all the time, and I have a third I'm not sure of, but Semitic instead of Semitic.
Yes.
Anti-Semitic and pundit, where even the pundits say pundit.
You're right, actually.
And
pundit
is from the
Indian subcontinent.
Machination versus machination.
Oh, machination.
Yeah, that's what I thought. but I hear both.
Yeah, you're right. It's machination, and people always pronounce the CH. It's similar to what Ross was talking about with the hard C. But, yes, it's machination, and so many people say machination nowadays.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Well, thank you for calling us, and you're listening to Leonard Lopit at Large.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes. Thank you so much for your show. I very much enjoying it since I discovered it. I have a question where the mispronunciation of ask comes from, because so very many African Americans call it ax.
Okay, that's an interesting question, and it's not just African Americans. Ax versus ask has appeared in early and middle English, actually. It's a quite it's called metathesis. It's when we switch sounds around. And a lot of times it's done just because it sounds better to our ears or their ears. For example, grass used to be called gris, and the letters switched. Bird was brid, and again, the letters switched. And ox is a similar sort of occurrence.
And it comes from England, you said?
Ox, pardon me?
Yeah, the miss, the instead of ask, ox.
Oh, the ask. No, ask is an old English word, but the switching around. I mean, it's been done for generations. It's not necessarily. Some people say it's not even necessarily incorrect. I, of course, don't like how it sounds particularly, but it's very common, and it has been very common throughout the history of the English language.
Yeah, I understand. I know it's very common. I'm wondering, how come it got from ask to an axe?
No one really knows why that sort of thing happens. Ask actually, it's old English would be Askian, and that comes from an earlier Proto-Indo-European Germanic word, Ossian. And for some reason, sometimes, for sound reasons, words, things switch. One beautiful and fascinating thing about English is we know very little about why things change, but they do.
Yeah, in some cases, I think it has to do with distinguishing us from the other people. For example, you have a whole page of British names like Chumley and Mousel, which are Chumley looks like it's Cholmondeley, and Mousley looks like a mouse hole. There's also Fanshawe, which looks like Featherstone Haw.
That's my favorite. And
I was told in England, when I was in school in England, that those pronunciations were imposed by the upper class to be able to distinguish themselves from the lower classes. If you mispronounced it, you weren't one of us.
Which gets back to the concept of shibboleth again, interestingly. Yeah. Certainly as Americans, you look at these words and there's no way. I mean, how Marjorie Banks becomes March Banks, mm-hmm. Forget it. I'm not going to even attempt that one. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. Again, we go back to how words and pronunciation establish you in a group, if you will.
We also see this with nautical terms. For example, what I always thought was boatswain is obviously bosun. Gunwale is gunnel. Forecastle is foxhole. How did these terms come to be pronounced so differently from the way they are spelled? They're all British terms, aren't they?
Most of them are, and in this case also, it's elision. You just the people. I'm assuming personally, because these are all nautical terms. You're on a ship. It's like windy. This is my imagination now, mind you. I'm not saying this scientifically, but you're on a ship. The deck is rolling. The wind is in your face. You're going to try to like bark out an order, and instead of going through like eight syllables or something, why not make it two? Just make it snappy, you know.
Although
that's my theory, though.
Although there are other confusing ones. For example, we pronounce a certain military rank lieutenant. The British pronounce it lieutenant, although there's no F in that word.
Well, that actually started out, Lou is French for left. Mm-hmm. So that is where you that whole thing even began. But you're right. There's what is the other word? Ross, do you know there's another word I'm thinking of that has... It doesn't have an F, or looks like it doesn't have an F, and it's Y, does it? Do you know what I'm talking about? No, you don't.
I don't remember that one, actually, no.
Well, it'll occur to us as we continue talking, yes. I'm sure. There's a lot of tricky words in foods. For example, I'm not even sure how to pronounce it myself. Acai berries.
Acai berry, yes. That comes from the problem with that one in terms of pronunciation. People have call it acai because it originally comes, it's originally a Guarana term, but when the... colonialists came, they put it with the Portuguese have a tilde under the C to make it sound soft, like acai.
Mm-hmm. A cedilla.
We don't have a tilde in English, so we took the tilde, a cedilla. We took out
it's
that little
squiggly
thing under the C, and we pronounce it acai because we see that C and think it's hard. But it is. It should be acai.
Then there's bruschetta. The one that a lot of people have problems with is the word that people pronounce as gyro, which is really gyro. Gnocchi with a silent.
Well, that one, we're both Greek in background, so we would pronounce a gyro.
Yeah, gyro.
With a very strong Greek accent, I think. But again, you see the G, and modern Greek doesn't have a hard G, so it should be gyro, but... You know, people see the hard G and they pronounce it gyro or gyro. Actually, they don't have a hard G. They say gyro, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. I mean, the problem with translating things in languages is that you get weird pronunciations. But to be fair, I mean, Cairo in Arabic is Qahira. I'm not going to say Qahira. I'm going to say Cairo.
Well, there's also a gyroscope.
For Americans to say gyro is fine.
There are gyroscopes where you would never say gyroscope, so...
You could, but I wouldn't recommend it.
And then one of the weirdest ones is something you find in Chinese restaurants, gooey duck, which looks like geoduck. Why couldn't it have been written out as gooey duck?
That's a tough one. That's one that I must say, as a kid, I remember running across that word in books, and I never dreamed it was gooey duck. It's because it was initially this. They're not quite sure why it's pronounced and spelled, you know, spelled so differently from the pronunciation. One theory says that English speakers wrote it. It's a Salish. That's the Native Americans who said it. It was called a gwiduck. And the English speakers in the 1800s wrote it as G-O-E duck to try to make it sound more like gooey duck. But it didn't look right. We go back to like how pronunciation changes because of what we're accustomed to. So people transpose the O and the E because it looked more right. And we have geography, geology, or whatever. O-E, G-O-E looked wrong. Mm. So that's how the spelling got changed over time, but the pronunciation did not change.
And then there's endive, or is it endive? We have V-I-C-T-U-A-L-S, victuals, which are pronounced vittles.
I got into trouble with that one. it should be pronounced vittle. I'm sorry if I'm interrupting here, but it should be pronounced vittle. And it comes originally from a word that came into English and it was spelled without the C. What happened in the 1700s are a lot of people, they're called Inkhorn scholars. They got fascinated by Latin and tried to put English into a Latin straitjacket. So they took this word vittle, which comes from the French via the Latin, and it was vitae in French and pronounced vittle in English. But they went backwards to the Latin, which was victualis, and they put the C back in. So it's written victual, but it's pronounced vittle. And I went to there was a reenactment of 19th century English ships, and the guy said, now for the victuals. And I went afterwards and told him. I said, you know, it's interesting. It should be pronounced vittles. And he said, absolutely not. So I don't know who won that one, but...
Let's take another call. Hi, WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, this is very interesting. I love to hear a program about speech. And when I was at work, the doctor said, would you hand me the thermometer? I said, the who? Thermometer.
I love that. The funny thing is, I had to think twice when you said it. I was like, wait a minute, how would I spell that? And I was like, ah, I love that one.
Yes, and I said, oh, you're saying thermometer. Oh, my goodness gracious. At one time, we didn't have as many people who spoke so many different languages as we have now. And sometimes when my daughter comes home, she sounds like the students she's teaching. She teaches 8-year-olds and whatnot. So it's quite interesting to see what has happened to the language. And even people used to say they listen to the
TV and the radio to learn how to speak correctly, but now they don't speak correctly. So
yeah, right. Now it's a problem.
Yes. But very good program. Oh, my name is Ann. Very good program.
Thank you, Ann.
Thanks,
you spell
Ann.
It with an E or without an E?
Yeah.
Well, it's actually Billy Ann, but since most people call me Ann, I just use Ann more. But it's Billy, like Billy Holiday, is Billy Ann.
Well, that's fabulous. I love that name. Go back to the Billy.
We just played some Billy Holiday, so you must have felt at home. Some of the other words that are really confusing are Q-U-A-Y, pronounced key or quay.
That one always gets me. I always thought it was quay, and I would hear people referring to keys, and I pictured it as a Key West or whatever, K-E-Y. And when we did, actually, when I learned that quay is key, I have real problems still with that. The interesting thing is, if you go back, though, quay came from K-A-Y, that evolved into key, K-E-Y.
Mm.
Then later, the spelling changed to French spelling Q-U-A-Y, Q-U-A-I, then Q-U-A-Y, but it was still pronounced key. So it's one of those ones that, through the years, just is still baffling.
So should the Florida Keys be spelled Q-U-A-Y-S?
I think actually they're not. The Florida Keys got their word, this is so confusing, not from the French key, but from the Spanish word for small island, Cayo, C-A-Y-O, which probably came from the same root as the French, but it came directly from the Spanish, so they're different.
Other words that really are confusing, C-H-I-M-E-R-A, Chimera.
Oh, Chimera.
Yes.
Or Chimera, yes.
Many people
that's
say Chimera.
That's another word, and that's another case of how things come into English via the Greek, but they change. Chimera in Greek would be with a sort of X sound, and it would be pronounced sort of chimera. But then it came in, the Latins took up the word, and they put a, they didn't have that weird Greek letter, so they put a CH in, and then from there we go chimera, whatever words, it should be chimera. Interestingly enough, though, that it really fascinated me, because that was in a film, I think it was one of the Mission Impossibles, and they actually pronounced it correctly. It was one of the few times I've heard it pronounced correctly.
Well,
although most people don't even know what it means. So,
let's take another call. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. This is the Leonard Lopez show, right?
Yes.
Hi, I had a question about not necessarily pronunciation. I apologize, but the difference between arugula, which we say here in America, and rocket, which they say in European English, which is we say arugula, which is closer to arugula. It's arugula in Italian. It's always driven me crazy. I wanted to know if you could speak to that.
That's an interesting question, because my husband loves cooking, and he always calls it rocket. Mm-hmm. And the first time he referred to rocket, I didn't know what he was talking about, because I always heard arugula. The rocket, though, came from the Italian. I mean, rucola or rucoli, which makes sense. But then arugula also did. So you've got that weird, again, the dichotomy. Arugula is I believe, isn't that the classification, like where it comes from? Isn't that I think it's the plant name.
Also, I think it comes from the Calabria, though. In Calabrian Italian, it's arugulu.
Hmm.
I think it might come from that.
And the first time I ever heard it, I thought it had to do with a Jewish pastry.
That makes sense.
Rugelach. You have certain words that are mispronounced partly because they're not really words, like irregardless.
Oh, that one drives me crazy. Although more and more, I mean, you're seeing, this is a pet peeve of mine, the English language changes, we'll accept that, and I think that's a good thing, and it does evolve, and dictionaries tell us what is commonly used and so forth, but we've got this case of irregardless now is becoming more so common that some dictionaries are saying, you know, let's just accept this. I it still sets my teeth on edge. That, and the other thing that's happening now is there's a fight now saying that we should allow the word literally to be used to mean figuratively, which I just cannot handle. I really can't. There's a limit as far as I'm concerned.
One of my limits is I could care less.
Oh, that one drives. The argument with that, interestingly, is people sometimes say, oh, they're saying it sarcastically, so it's correct. And I always think they're not saying it sarcastically, they're saying it incorrectly.
Should we take another call? BAI, you're on the air. Hello? You're on the air.
Yes, calling back because I need to clarify something. First of all, I want to say Happy New Year because year comes means a turn. It comes from the word gear, which comes from gyroscope, which comes from gyrate, which comes from gyro.
Well,
we're talking about that rotating piece of meat, right?
Mm-hmm.
It goes right up to the word year.
That's interesting.
Isn't it? It means the year doesn't specify a certain amount of time. It means a turn.
Mm-hmm. That's very, very nice little, I like this little call. Thank you.
Thank you for clarifying that. And you probably put it in the second edition of the book.
We're stealing it.
A staff member here put a little post-it in front of me, waiting for Godot. Now, this is written by an English speaker, although he spoke French. But he's doing a combination of English and French there. G-O-D-O-T.
Indeed. Because, it was written by Samuel. Oh, God, my mind blank. Hi,
Rebecca.
Samuel. Yeah, thank you. Rebecca. I'm picturing the man, and his name, vanished from me. There's a lot of that. You see a lot of crossover. The weird thing, Ross can speak to this better than I, because he's the Latin expert, but so many of our words come from both Greek and Latin simultaneously that things get, cross purposes sometimes in terms of pronunciation and meaning.
But the
one Latin word that really bothers me is speaking Latin is alumni, alumnae. That's straight from Latin, though. How do you pronounce it? Do I do the Latin pronunciation or do the American pronunciation? I do the American pronunciation now.
You say some
alumni for alumnae, for alumni. Here we go.
You say some of the things that we mispronounce have to do with just misunderstanding the origin. For example, dull is dish water, which you say should be ditch water.
That's an interesting one. I think that word changed. The original term probably was ditch water. And what happens with languages, we begin, that's an idiom, and what happens with languages, we don't see ditch water that much. We certainly see dishwater a lot. So we've switched it over into something that we're more familiar with, which, does make sense. And apparently now that's even beginning to fade out because we have dishwashers. So apparently now a new idiom that seems to be appearing is he's as dull as a dishwasher.
Ooh.
I've seen that a whole bunch of times.
Oh, really? That's amazing.
I haven't seen that one. That would scare me.
I started Googling it, and I found it a number of times. And I'm wondering seeing a shift going on.
And then there's champ at the bit, which comes out of chomp, I assume. No, chomp is a word that we use. How did it become champ?
Champing is a term. A horse champs at its bit. Literally, it means chewing or grinding noisily. That has been around since the 1500s. But people say chomping because Americans, I think it was in the 30s or 40s, didn't really know the word champ, so they substituted chomp, which they know like biting. So it seemed like the logical, correct term. But it technically isn't. It is champ at the bit. But chomp at the bit is more common now. So I think this is another case where the correct thing sounds wrong. I think that if you say champ at the bit, many people think, oh, she means chomp, you know? The other one that I like, another saying, is buck naked. People tend to say butt naked these days, which is a bit more evocative, but wrong.
Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, hello, yes. I think one of the reasons, and you probably discussed this, that people mispronounce words because they've never heard them pronounced. They've read them for years. They're very familiar with them. They know what they mean, right? But they've always mispronounced in their head, and they're totally sure it's correct. One of my favorites was a friend of mine who was a very educated woman with a master's degree. She was in her 50s at this point, and she said something like, well, you know what happens when they do that? The whole thing goes ori. And I said, it goes what? She said, Ori. Uh-huh. I said, what are you saying? Spell that. She said, A-W-R-Y, Ori. And I said, oh, no, Harriet, that's awry. She said, really? She was 55 years old, very brilliant, just never had occasion to use the word or make the connection with hearing someone else. She just never heard it pronounced, and she always heard it in her head as Ori. And,
that's,
well, why would you say, you know? It's very funny. By the way, I wanted to ask about, Lenny, you're the perfect person to ask about this because you're interviewing people all the time. What do you do, and I know this must have happened to you sometime in your career, you're interviewing someone and they badly mispronounce a word or a name, and you have to use the same word or name, well, you want to, three sentences later. Mm-hmm. What do you do? You're going to say it right now and they're going to be very embarrassed, but you're not going to say it wrong because then you'll feel ridiculous. What do you do? What's the ethics here?
Well, I actually try to pronounce the word correctly because there are listeners out there who are going to write to
right.
me. And say, you let that guest mispronounce the word. On the other hand, I'm very aware of the fact that I'm embarrassing somebody. It's kind of like a little slap on the wrist. And and I'm uncomfortable doing it, but I think I have no choice in the matter.
Right. There was another favorite one in an interview where somebody was being interviewed about gun control laws that he did not like. And twice he said, they keep promulgating these laws. And the host was very cool. He said it twice. The host just let it go. They keep promulgating these laws. And like you said, the woman is laughing there. I don't know your name. You mentioned the point that we tend to take words that are strange and make them more familiar.
Exactly.
So he must have many times read the word promulgate, but that's so awkward in English. It's so rare that you have a M-U-L-G. But we do have regulate, coagulate, right? So he saw it and he just turned it into promulgate.
I don't know why. I just adore how that sounds. It really tickles me.
I think we should use it.
But I think
start a campaign.
I think all of this is part of the learning process. For example, when I was a kid and I read Black Hawk comics, one of the Black Hawks was French, and I there was always a worrying situation, and I thought he was saying "oi oi, Black Hawk." When he was really saying "wee wee, Blackhawk," but you know, the Blackhawk would say, "Okay, Andre or Pierre or whatever his name was, you take the left flank, and somebody else would Olaf will take the right flank," and he'd say, "Oi oi, Blackhawk!" Whoa, we're in for trouble here. Are there any other favorites you have? Then there are new ones like the technological ones, like GIF. Do we say GIF or do we say GIF?
That one is fascinating. We got some nasty emails about, and it's in fear. We say it's the problem is everybody says GIF, including us, and we in the book even say GIF. But the guy who invented them says it should be pronounced GIF. So we put that in there because he said he got it. He developed them for CompuServe, and he pronounced it that way because it sounded like GIF the peanut butter, and it was choosy developers choose GIF. But everybody in the whole world, I think, says GIF. And if you say GIF to someone, they look at you like, you know, you were born many, 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 many years ago and don't even know how to use a computer. But, I mean, our thought was the guy who invented it should know, but everybody's ignoring him. So GIF it is.
The book we've been discussing is You're Saying It Wrong, A Pronunciation Guide to the 150 Most Commonly Mispronounced Words and Their Tangled Histories of Misuse. It's from 10 Speed Press and written by Catherine Petras and Ross Petras. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And let me also just add, we do a podcast now called You're Saying It Wrong, where we take a topic every 2 weeks and talk about mispronunciation and so forth, and you can find it on both iTunes and Google Play.
Okay, I'll look for it. Thanks.
Super.
Hey, thanks very much.
And that brings us to the end of our show. My great thanks to Catherine and Ross Petras, to my producer, Barbara Kahn, to Reggie Johnson, who was at the audio controls, to Charlie Morrow, who composed our theme music, and to my executive producer, Jesse Lent. Leonard Lopate at Large comes to you on Saturdays at 4 and Tuesdays at noon. You can subscribe to the Leonard Lopate at Large podcast on iTunes and by clicking on Robin Hood Radio's archive program site. which is robinhoodradio.com. You can also check out Leonard Lopate at Large Facebook page. We hope to see you next week.